from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
6 minutes past the top of the hour. Get ready to get informed. This is America's Radio News. Glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
I was not intent on standing for the next elections.
Egyptian battle leader says he'll go, but is it soon enough?
Shortly, I will lay down an amendment to repeal Obamacare.
The Senate takes a step towards squashing Obamacare.
Now, I would put Robert Gibbs under house arrest until the crisis is over.
One political pundit wants a White House official under lock and key.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation for all the latest news.
Pretty nice day here in the nation's capital, Lori London, and compared to what's going on in the rest of the country weather-wise.
Absolutely. We're actually seeing a bit of sunshine. No snow. Unfortunately, that's not the case for a lot of folks. Well, hundreds of pro-government supporters attacked protesters today in Cairo's Central Square, where thousands were pushing ahead with demonstrations demanding the ouster of President Mubarak. His supporters were out in the streets today for the first time in large numbers, with thousands demanding an end to the anti-government movement a day after the president went on national television rejecting demands for him to step down immediately.
Yeah, President Obama hit the airwaves last night. He praised and battled Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's decision not to stand for re-election in September, and he urged the nation's military to ensure that this time the change is peaceful. But even as Mr. Obama rejected any role for outsiders to determine Egypt's leaders, he laid out several conditions that he said the transitional government must meet. Quote, an orderly transition must be meaningful, it must be peaceful, and it must begin now, the president said.
A colossal blizzard roaring across a third of the country has paralyzed the nation's heartland with ice and snow, shutting airports, schools, and leaving normally bustling towns deserted. This monstrous storm is billed as one of the worst in decades. It knocked out power as it made its way from Texas to Maine, bringing Chicago and the rest of the Midwest West to a standstill.
From the frigid United States, we'll go back over to the hot spot in the world right now. It's Egypt. And former British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, he feels that the right solution for the United States and Britain to weather the Egyptian crisis is to partner with Egypt as they find their way to their next government.
Well, we should be trying to partner this process of change. You know, we should be there saying, look, the present situation is not sustainable. In the 21st century, people are going to expect their countries to evolve to more open, democratic systems of government. We can help you manage that process, and we will. Now, I think, you know, for us in the West, as I say, it's time now, I think, to be moving from the position of commentating on this situation to get to the point where we've actually got a plan of action as to how we help this process of change happen in the right way. I think it all plays out depending on whether, as I say, the modernizing forces, the people who want, you know, the types of things we take for granted in Britain and America, whether they are the people that would succeed those governments, or whether the very strong Islamist movements wouldn't rather take control.
So what do you think, the former Prime Minister of England, is trying to say here? Do you think we should start taking an active role to help them in their free and fair elections coming up? Or do you think he's going a little bit further than that?
I think he's being vague like everyone else. I think we're just not sure who represents Egypt at this point.
It's true.
Well, Egypt's opposition leader, Mohamed al-Baradei, had harsh words yesterday in reaction to the speech from Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak and his decision not to seek re-election. Al-Baradei said Mubarak should really leave by the end of this week.
I've lived in the U.S. for 15 years. I've lived in Europe for 25 years. I've lived in democracies. Without democracy, there's no life. So the issue of who is going to run doesn't really matter. The important thing is how he's going to be chosen.
Look at your country right now. There's no internet service. Commerce has ground to a halt. Stores are closed. Nothing's happening. The price of oil is spiking. Tourism, people are trying to get out, not come in.
Sure.
How long can this go on?
It can't last for very long. The country is going down the drain. And I think unless Mubarak understand that he need to go by the end of the week, my fear that this whole situation will go bloody. And again, I continue to appeal to him too, and people around him, that he need to go. He is the major part of the solution. Once he is out, everything else will go back to normal.
And back here in the United States, I mean, the fact that Mr. El-Baradei, who has proven to be a friend of Iran and not actually an enemy of the United States, but not a friend of the United States, and that he's actually teaming up with the Muslim Brotherhood in trying to form a coalition government, give some folks here stateside some pause.
But he was right about one thing. If Mubarak doesn't leave, things are going to get bloody. And sure enough, the next day, today, we're seeing that. And these seem to be pro-Mubarak supporters that have come out in a very organized way with violence.
Right. And actually, the violence has erupted today out there in Egypt. Back here at home, though, long before his administration went into the federal court to fight the 26 states that are now challenging the constitutionality of the federal government, forcing people to buy health insurance, then presidential candidate Barack Obama told Ellen DeGeneres that, unlike his opponent, Hillary Clinton, he opposed forcing the uninsured to buy health insurance, saying it would be like forcing the homeless to buy homes. Here's a flashback to the interview that should be haunting Mr. President Obama right now.
Let's talk about the flyers in Ohio that Hillary says that they didn't represent her properly. They misrepresent her. Did they? And what do you say about that?
Obviously, I think that they represented her position properly, which is that she supported in the past NAFTA, which has been pretty hard on Ohio. And we've had an ongoing discussion about health care. Both of us want to provide health care to all Americans. There's a slight difference, and her plan is a good one, but she mandates that everybody buy health care. She'd have the government force every individual to buy insurance, and I don't have such a mandate because I don't think the problem is that people don't want health insurance, it's that they can't afford it. So I focus more on lowering costs, and this is a modest difference. But it's one that she's tried to elevate, arguing that because I don't force people to buy health care, that I'm not insuring everybody. Well, if things were that easy, I could mandate everybody buy a house, and that would solve the problem of homelessness. It doesn't.
Well, that could be a problem for the Obama administration as they seek to defend Obamacare in the courts coming up here.
I do agree, although, you know, government, like any business, evolves and restructures. And apparently that's what has happened with this, that he somehow that needed to be put into his policy.
Coming up here on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to Kara Rowland. She is the White House correspondent for The Washington Times. We're going to talk to her about Obamacare and how it's being found unconstitutional in some courts.
And we're following the violent clashes that have erupted between pro- and anti-government protesters in Egypt.
And a report says the United States has held a secret meeting with the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll tell you where it's coming from next on America's Radio News.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
You can read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now. This is America's Radio News. Glad you are where you are. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for being with us on this Tuesday, February 2nd. Well, thousands of Australians are being urged to gather their loved ones and flee a monster cyclone that stretched or strengthened overnight and threatens hours of terrifying winds and torrential rain. Is being compared to a Katrina-like storm there.
A report says the Egyptian government has information that a diplomat at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo secretly met yesterday with a senior leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, the nation's major Islamist opposition group. WorldNet Daily says the topic of the meeting was the future of Egypt following the fall of President Hosni Mubarak, an Egyptian intelligence official told that publication. The claim comes amid charges from Cairo that the Obama administration has been encouraging the protests, rocking Egypt, and targeting the rule of Mubarak, a key U.S. ally in the Middle East.
A sting operation by Google revealing Microsoft has been copying results from Google for its Bing search engine. The search giant alleges Microsoft has been using its Internet Explorer web browser and the Bing search bar to harvest information on Google users.
Let's head over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Kara Rowland, the White House correspondent for The Washington Times. We're talking with her about Obamacare. Kara, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I tell you what, man, it looks like that the punches are flying fast and furious at the president's signature piece of legislation domestically anyway. We've got the Florida court making the ruling. We've got the Senate Republicans now stepping up to take a couple of swipes at it, trying to get the states to be able to opt out. Where do you see this all going?
You know, well, not to sound like a broken record, but I think it's really going to end up at the Supreme Court. I think that's what who's going to have the final say. And, of course, this latest ruling by the Florida judge brings the score to about 2-2 between those judges that have upheld the law and those that have struck it down. But this ruling this week was particularly damning because, unlike the Virginia judge that said the individual mandate was unconstitutional, this judge found that if the mandate falls, the entire law falls. So that's just been huge. But, of course, you know, you wouldn't know that from listening to the folks over at the White House. They did a blog post essentially just attacking the judge for judicial activism and, again, doing what Democrats have done, just talking about why the law is a good idea as opposed to addressing the merits of the case.
Kara, now this judge is a conservative Republican appointee, and he had already signaled his hostility. We're talking about independent judiciary, and we know that two federal judges have upheld it, and they were both Democrats. Two federal judges appointed by Republicans struck it down. How are we seeing this?
Well, I mean, Democrats would want you to think that it is all political, and again, it you know, when it comes to the Supreme Court, I'm sure if it does get struck down, obviously, Republicans do have a majority on the Supreme Court. I'm sure they'll be saying the same thing. Of course, there's not going to be much they can do if it is struck down. But again, that's the best rallying cry they have at this point. This is all political, all judicial activism.
Yeah, I got to ask you, too. GOP leader McConnell said that he's going to force a vote in the Senate on this. As a matter of fact, he says it could come either today or sometime this week.
Yeah.
How's he going to be able to do that?
Yeah, well, they're going to try, the last I heard, and of course, as you mentioned, this is all kind of changing pretty quickly, is they're going to try to attach a vote on health care to another bill, this, you know, FAA authorization bill, because Harry Reid won't, of course, hold a vote on a standalone bill. But again, it's going to be an uphill battle. It would require 60 votes, so obviously some Democrats and even some moderates who are up for tough re-elections, you know, I just don't see how they're going to get the votes. But again, their goal is, even if they don't get the votes to overturn it, to at least try and re-litigate and refight this battle, which they think the people are on their side.
Her name is Kara Rowland. She's the White House correspondent for The Washington Times. Thanks a lot, Kara, for being on America's Radio News with us.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you. You know, looking at some of the reaction there to the Florida judge ruling, Jan Brewer, another a very high-profile, very controversial figure over there in Arizona.
Yes, she is.
She's you know, one of the Republican governors who appreciates Judge Roger Vinson's decision on Obamacare. Here is Jan Brewer reacting to that.
We're very, very pleased and encouraged. But in the state of Arizona, we will continue our negotiations with Secretary Sebelius and try to get some flexibility and some reasonability out of the federal government. Because simply, although we are very encouraged that the Obama health care plan was found unconstitutional, we've always known it was unaffordable, unsustainable, we know that they probably will move forward and make an attempt to either get a stay or go all the way to the Supreme Court. So we can't take any chances. We have budgets we have to get out. So I need flexibility. I need a waiver or some type of help from the federal government in order to solve the issues that we're facing.
What you hear from Jan Brewer, she's echoing a lot of the Republican governors and the attorneys generals from all the states that actually got ruled on there in that Florida court decision, saying they want some flexibility. They want mandates coming from Washington how to spend their money. They want to be able to have the flexibility to spend the money they want the way they want to.
Absolutely. And this is an issue that folks are just so incredibly divided on both sides of the political aisle.
Very true.
Well, Egypt, Microsoft co-founder and philanthropist Bill Gates spoke with Katie Couric about the Egyptian government's decision to cut off the country's access to Internet. Couric asked Gates whether he was surprised that President Mubarak had been able to impose a complete Internet blackout on the nation.
Well, it's not that hard to shut the Internet down if you have military power where you can tell people that that's what's going to happen. Now, we still have handheld video cameras and, you know, lots of coverage coming out, so there's an awareness. And, you know, whenever you do something extraordinary like that, you're sort of showing people that you're afraid of the truth getting out. So it's a very difficult tactic, but certainly it can be shut off.
And the internet is still shut off, I might add, even though Mubarak says he's leaving and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And here stateside, they've been trying to give our president that power to do a kill switch here in America on the internet. And that's taken a new perspective because of what's happening in Egypt as well. Coming up here on America's Radio News, we are visiting next with Michael Reagan, the author of The New Reagan Revolution. We'll talk to him about his dad's celebrating the 100th birthday celebration for Ronald Reagan.
And the mother of all storms wreaking havoc across the nation.
And GOP leader McConnell says that a vote on health care will happen in the Senate. We'll give you details coming up next on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. America's Radio News. Glad to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
I was not intent on standing for the next elections.
Egypt's embattled leader says he'll go, but is it soon enough?
Shortly, I will lay down an amendment to repeal Obamacare.
The Senate takes a step towards squashing Obamacare.
Now, I would put Robert Gibbs under house arrest until the crisis is over.
One political pundit wants a White House official under lock and key.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation for all the latest news.
Hot spots over in the Middle East, cold spots over here in the United States, Lori London.
Absolutely. Things are bad there, Chris Salcedo, as international pressure grows for Egypt's president to quit, and his closest ally, the U.S., pushes for fast transition. Things taking an ugly turn on the streets of Cairo today. Clashes with several hundred pro-Mubarak supporters, throwing Molotov cocktails, shooting automatic weapons near Liberation Square, near a museum housing some of the nation's most precious history. Witnesses say people fought each other with sticks and stones, troops surrounding the square, making no attempt to intervene.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell will force an up or down vote on the repeal of health care reform on Wednesday, today actually, testing the unity of Democrats who had promised to roll back. That rollback would never see the light of day in that chamber. The vote in the Senate will come 2 weeks to the day after the House voted, largely along party lines, to repeal the health care law.
While some are calling it the mother of all storms, forecasters warning ice accumulations could knock some tree limbs and power lines down. Ice could also affect transit service, even as plow drivers struggle to keep up with the snow in the nation's midsection. That storm bringing snow, thunder, wind, and ice. It started in the Midwest, and it's now barreling east as far as New England.
Let's head to the America's Radio News line. Standing by there is Michael Reagan. He's the author of The New Reagan Revolution. We're coming up on his dad's 100th birthday, and Mr. Reagan, glad to have you on America's Radio News.
Yeah, good to be with you.
I wanted to talk to you first off. So what are some of the preparations? What are some of the celebrations we're going to see around the country, out in California in particular, to celebrate your dad's birthday?
Oh, there's all kinds of celebrations going on. Celebrations are going on at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley. Sarah Palin and Dick Cheney are going to be at the Ranch Center in Santa Barbara, where all the conservatives are meeting, I gather. And so that's going on. You have things going on, really, in a lot of places. Super Bowl will have an honor for my father. By the way, that's what my father would be doing on his birthday. He would be watching the Super Bowl. And that's exactly what I'm going to be doing.
Very nice. So, Michael, what do you think of modern-day conservatives that claim to be just like your dad?
Yeah, that's kind of one of the reasons I wrote the book, New Reagan Revolution, is to really explain who he was and what he was and how he really built coalitions. He had to work with people he even disagreed with on a regular basis. But he found areas of agreement, and he worked forward from there, not backwards. He wasn't a purist, per se, where you had to agree with him all the time. But if he could get you 80% of the time on his team, he was willing to work with you. He wrote a book on abortion back in 1983, Abortion, the Conscience of a Nation. Great book, great pro-life and pro-adoption person. He yet supported his daughter, Maureen, in 1992, a pro-choice Republican for Congress because he agreed with her more than he agreed with the Democrat, who he disagreed with 80% of the time. So he really understood the art of politics, the art of negotiation, and finding those areas of agreement, and not using the disagreements to really hinder and get in the way of the areas where they agreed where they could move forward.
Well, let's talk a little politics right now. That some conservative circles around the United States are crediting your dad with his appointment of this Judge Vincent down in Florida. He was a Reagan appointee. He's the one that just handed down this this ruling, striking down the constitutionality of Obamacare. What do you make of it that, you know, this many years after your dad has passed away and coming up on his 100th birthday, his effects on the United States continue to be very profound?
You remember my father, I mean, back in 1961, you go listen to all my father's speeches. He was so far ahead of his time, in his time and ahead of his time at the same time. 1961, the talk he gave on socialized medicine, the time for choosing. Also back in the 1960s, my book, which is predicated, you know, on his speech he gave in 1976 at the convention in Kansas City. So to have a judge rule correctly, I head up the repealitnow.org website to get this repealed, because it's absolutely wrong to force people to buy insurance and what have you. And the government's never been able to solve those kinds of problems. As my father said, is the problem. They are not the solution to the problems.
What do you think your dad would do today about the health care crisis?
About the health care crisis?
Right.
I think everybody knows there is huge, huge problems with it. The regulations are just insurmountable in so many areas. You know, government doesn't see where it has caused any of the problems. You can't buy that down, you know, I just want a health care policy. I don't need breast implants. I don't need the hair transplants. I don't need this. I don't need that. It's something.
Hey, Mr. Reagan, I think we're losing your cell phone call here, buddy. I'm sorry. That looks like we're going to have to cut the interview short, unfortunately. But, hey, we'll keep track of what's going on with the celebrations here with your dad's 100th birthday coming up on the 6th. Michael Reagan, he's the author of The New Reagan Revolution. Check it out if you want to get some perspectives on one of the finest presidents here in American history. Thank you, Mr. Reagan, for being on the show. This is America's Radio News, and coming up here next, WikiLeaks, it strikes again. It is revealed that the FBI is still hunting for those responsible for the 9/11 attacks.
And pro-government forces in Egypt get violent as the crisis there deepens.
And unfortunately, Egypt's antiquities, they are at risk with all the violence going on over there right now. We'll give you an update of what's happening with what some of these antiques that are being called the property of humanity. It's all coming your way next here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
I'm Lori London. Welcome to the show, and thanks for being with us on this. What is today, Chris?
It's Groundhog Day.
That's right. And I think there may have been a good prediction. While WikiLeaks strikes again, the FBI has launched a manhunt for a previously unknown team of men suspected to be part of the 9/11 attacks. That, according to the Daily Telegraph, secret documents reveal the three Qatari men conducted surveillance on the targets, provided support to the plotters, and had tickets for a flight to Washington on the eve of the atrocities.
A lot of tragedy happening over in the Middle East, and one of the side effects from all of the violence going on in there is Egypt's antiquities there have been put at risk. A small group of looters, they damaged priceless artifacts inside the Egyptian Museum in Cairo before being captured. Soldiers took a position afterwards in the museum to protect those precious antiquities, I should say. Zahi Hawass, Egypt's State Minister of Antiquities and National Geographic Explorer in Residence, confirms the damage but says nothing was stolen. That's good news at the Cairo Museum. Among the damaged artifacts, though, items from King Tut's tomb. And despite the clearly visible damage, Egyptologists are hopeful some of the items can be repaired and restored.
Oh, that's tragic.
Heartbreaking.
Well, a suburban woman who was a live-in caretaker for her boyfriend's elderly father calmly told a U.S. judge yesterday she worked feverishly online under the name Jihad Jane to support Islamic terrorists. Wow. And moved overseas to further her plan to kill a Swedish artist who had offended Muslims.
They're getting the gang back together in Dallas. Did you hear about this? Larry Hagman was set to return to the series in a remake of the series, rather, of the classic 1980s soap opera. The 79-year-old will reprise his role as J.R. Ewing in the new pilot to be made by TNT. Original stars Patrick Duffy and Linda Gray will also be there playing their characters. Who did Patrick Duffy play? What was the name of the character?
That
would be Bobby. That would be Bobby.
Okay.
And who did Linda Gray play? Oh, come on. You're terrible at this.
No, you know what? I was thinking more like when you said Larry Hagman. I was hoping you were going with the
I Dream of Jeannie. I know. Well, truth be told, I Dream of Jeannie would be a lot more fun. But yeah, she's going to play Sue Ellen Ewing. So they're reprising their roles. And of course, who did they get to play? Oh, yeah, the new show will focus on the Ewing offspring, John Ross Jr., the Christopher Ewing, as the clash over the future and the family dynasty.
You think that'll be successful?
It'll be good for a year or two. It'll be fun to get the gang back together, I think.
Well, in other celebrity news, prosecutors in California have charged Jamie Presley with misdemeanor drunken driving. The 33-year-old My Name is Earl co-star was arrested January 5th after police say she was stopped for a traffic violation. She was released after posting bail, but the deputy city attorney there says Presley was charged with driving under the influence and had a blood alcohol content of 0.20 or higher.
Mm-mm. We made reference to this earlier here on America's Radio News. The president of the United States getting in front of the nation last night, talking about what was going on over there in Egypt on this situation and the decision of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak not to seek re-election.
Indeed, all of us who are privileged to serve in positions of political power do so at the will of our people. Through thousands of years, Egypt has known many moments of transformation. The voices of the Egyptian people tell us that this is one of those moments. This is one of those times. Now, it is not the role of any other country to determine Egypt's leaders. Only the Egyptian people can do that. What is clear, and what I indicated tonight to President Mubarak, is my belief that an orderly transition must be meaningful, it must be peaceful, and it must begin now. Furthermore, the process must include a broad spectrum of Egyptian voices and opposition parties. It should lead to elections that are free and fair. And it should result in a government that's not only grounded in democratic principles, but is also responsive to the aspirations of the Egyptian people.
Now, I think the president has been pretty much supported from both sides of the aisle, at least as I'm watching the news coverage, until his statements last night. Some of the right-wing pundits have actually taken this speech because they are alleging that the president's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. He is saying that we have no say in what's going to happen over there in Egypt, but then again, he starts laying down conditions about what he wants to see. I think that he's left a flank open there to some of his critics.
And the Egyptian people clearly are not concerned with the American geopolitical side of all of this.
That's true. They
clearly want their president gone, and they want a president there who puts their needs ahead of America. So, you know, this could pose some problems ultimately for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Senator John McCain is outlining his impressions of Mohammed El-Baradei, the opposition leader, and the Muslim Brotherhood, as well as outlining the path that he thinks would be the most productive for the U.S.-Egypt future relationship.
First of all, El-Baradei is not a friend of the United States. Second of all, he could be a figurehead for the Muslim Brotherhood since he has no real following in Egypt. He's lived most of his life outside of Egypt. Second thing is the Muslim Brotherhood, we ought to recognize, is a organization that wants Sharia law, is tied up with Hamas, has been, is by any definition, a radical Islamic organization, although they may be portraying themselves as somewhat different. And finally, now we have to make sure that a new election is free, fair, open, honest, and that radical Islamic candidates or platforms are exposed for what they are.
Well, Mr. McCain actually going a lot farther than I've heard a lot of American politicians go, saying that Mr. El-Baradei, not a friend of the United States, and he is the face of the opposition right now. And I think that Mr. McCain is reflective of a certain constituency here in the United States that doesn't want to see another Iran form in Egypt.
I don't think anyone wants to see that.
Right.
Absolutely not.
All right. Coming up here, Did you see this last night? Probably seeing a lot more of the former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney as he prepares for his presidential run in 2012. At least a lot of folks are saying he's going to run. He was on David Letterman. Check out this top 10 list. You're going to love it.
Number 10.
Mitt is short for Mitt You.
Well, I miss you too. Number 9.
I can't begin my day until I've read the Washington Post and Kim Kardashian's tweets.
Yes. Number 8.
I'm the guy in the photo that comes with your picture frame.
That's right. That's where I'm speaking. Number 7.
I spent 6 months in a Mexican prison for selling black market pillow pets.
What? What? Number 6.
Do I smell as good as I look? No.
Number 5.
In high school, I was voted Mittiest.
Me too. Number 4.
I got into politics for the piles and piles of paperwork.
Yeah, that's right. Number 3.
Look for my best-selling biography. They call me Baba Romney.
Number 2.
I have absolutely no idea where my birth certificate is.
That's right. And the number 1 thing you don't know about Mitt Romney.
Oprah is my half-sister.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's not running for president.
No way.
No. She's just all over the media for fun.
Yeah.
Well, get this, Chris. A homeless couple is heading to Dallas for the Super Bowl despite having only 90 cents in their pockets.
What?
Weta Wright and her boyfriend Aaron were walking around Green Bay's Winterfest celebration, repeatedly asked by strangers, "Have you been to Dallas lately?" It turns out the Dallas Convention and Visitors Bureau had put on a contest with a mystery man walking around the city, and the first person to approach him with that question would win a trip to the Super Bowl.
We came down here hoping that we might be able to do something free at the Winterfest, have some fun, and then we won Super Bowl tickets. And it doesn't get any more amazing than that. We had 90 cents in our pocket, and we have won a package that people have offered thousands of dollars for. And all I could think of is, oh my gosh, these corporations that put this on, you know, they must be thinking, yes, finally, a contest that we put it on and the parameters were so that somebody that could never in a million years afford to go can go. And what better than a couple in a homeless shelter? Not that we're more deserving, but a homeless shelter. You know, we're lucky to get a can of soda or a movie, and we're going to the Super Bowl, and I've never been to a football game.
See, that's just not... I like the fact that they're homeless and they had only 90 cents to their name. They're going to the Super Bowl. That's fantastic. But she's never even seen a football game, man.
Aw, but you know what? It's nice to hear a feel-good story with all the bad news.
Yeah, I hear that. Okay, as we mentioned earlier, today is the world's most famous groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil. He did not see his shadow and decreed an early spring. Bill Murray gave us a far different forecast in the classic 1993 movie about the Keystone State's favorite tradition.
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Groundhog, like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you. You know, you want a prediction about the weather, you're asking the wrong Phil. I'll give you a winter prediction. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, and it's going to last you for the rest of your life.
From America's Radio News to you on this Groundhog Day, coming up here next, Robert Bryce, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We'll talk to him about the growing discontent over there in the Middle East.
And violent clashes have erupted between pro- and anti-government protesters in Egypt.
And Al-Qaeda on the brink of using a nuclear bomb. Details coming your way. This is where America's news breaks.
Live from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Read about it tomorrow, hear about it right now on America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
It can't last for very long. The country is going down the drain.
Egypt's opposition leader calls President Mubarak's offer to leave a lie.
You know, we're lucky to get a can of soda or a movie.
A field of dreams for one homeless family.
My hope is that the people will tell the Congress this is a bad product. Start over.
Senate Republicans say Obamacare has a weak pulse.
We're circling the globe and scouring the nation to bring you all the breaking news. It is cold here in our nation, Lori London, but it's really heating up over there in the Middle East.
Most definitely, Chris Salcedo. Well, international pressure grows for Egypt's president to quit and the U.S. pushes for a fast transition, things have taken a very ugly turn there on the streets of Cairo. Clashes turning violent between opponents and supporters of President Mubarak. Soon after, thousands of pro-Mubarak supporters threw Molotov cocktails. They shot automatic weapons into Liberation Square. Witnesses say pro-Mubarak forces have been riding in on camels and horseback, fighting with protesters, while troops surrounding the square have made no attempt to intervene.
Al-Qaeda is on the verge of producing radioactive weapons after sourcing nuclear material and recruiting rogue scientists to build dirty bombs, according to leaked diplomatic documents. A leading atomic regulator has privately warned that the world stands on the brink of a nuclear 9/11. Security briefings suggest that jihadi groups are also close to producing workable and efficient biological and chemical weapons that could kill thousands if unleashed in attacks on the West. This is according to thousands of classified American cables obtained by WikiLeaks.
Of course. A colossal blizzard roaring across a third of the nation, paralyzing the nation's heartland with ice and snow, shutting airports and schools and leaving normally bustling towns deserted. This monstrous storm is now being billed as the worst in decades. It's delivering a knockout by knockout to state after state, from Texas to Maine, Chris.
Former New Mexico governor and a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Bill Richardson. He's weighing in on the unrest in Egypt and what it will mean for the rest of the world. Richardson says he isn't sure if President Mubarak's departure will be enough.
I don't know if that's going to be sufficient. I don't know if the population in Egypt is going to say, we want you out right now. And then the issue then becomes, does a transitional government form before elections in September, possibly headed by his vice president, Suleiman, or possibly headed by Mohamed El-Baradei, who's probably the most viable candidate in the opposition? It's still very uncertain.
That's a great point. There are all kinds of permutations about this, the way this can go. And it's just so uncertain over there right now.
Absolutely.
About the complexion of this transition will be.
We just don't know what is going to happen. Well, turning to health care, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell announced yesterday he'll force a vote aimed at repealing Obamacare completely.
Shortly, I will lay down an amendment to repeal Obamacare. If we pledge to the American people that we would seek to repeal this 2,700-page bill that seeks to restructure all of American health care and put the decisions in Washington. I'm pleased to announce that all 47 of my members will be voting to repeal Obamacare.
Wow, this is absolutely historic.
But, Chris, you know, really, isn't this all more political drama? This isn't going anywhere in the Senate.
What, we don't know that. Mitch McConnell's going to force a vote, so there are 23 Democrats that are up for re-election. Do they actually want to go into the 2012 election saying they supported Obamacare, which still, by all polling, says is very unpopular with the American
people? Well, actually, it's now 47% opposed, 40% four, so
right.
But it is narrowing. It is narrowing.
Well, that's very true. All right, Governor Rendell, former Pennsylvania governor, he's weighing in on the Supreme Court because this is ultimately where Obamacare, a lot of the prognosticators are saying this is where it's all going to be. He says the Supreme Court needs to think very carefully about whether they really want to overturn the individual mandate in Obamacare.
Interestingly, you know who's for the mandate most of all? The insurance companies.
Of course they
because
are.
Because with the insurance reforms, and we all agree that nobody should be disqualified because they have a pre-existing illness, right? But if they're going to take all those people who have cancer and put them into the healthcare delivery system, then the only way they can pay for it is all of us who are in good shape are part of that system. There can't be any free riders. And the Supreme Court's going to have to think very carefully before they knock out this mandate. Because if they knock out this mandate, what about other mandates? Is it against the law for you to be required to have automobile insurance?
If I drive a car.
Is it against the law?
But that's my choice.
Is it against the law for you to not pay your taxes?
No, but you're talking about
and again,
a different
remember,
thing.
There's a choice
you're talking
in
about
this
different
bill.
Thing. You have no choice.
Well, you have no choice about paying income tax either. You can also pay in, and you're paying in because you're paying for all of us. It's just like Social Security. We all pay in because we all benefit. And I think the Supreme Court's going to have to think long and hard before throwing this out, because if they do, the whole fabric of government, I think, has to be reexamined.
You know this is a lousy bill.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a good bill.
Hmm. Well, Rendell's making a lot of points there, and he's citing other controversial passages by government that a lot of people are saying that aren't good either. So I'm not sure he's actually making his case.
But on the other hand, you know, people will seek out medical help whether or not they can afford it. Everyone will need it at some point.
America's Radio News continues next with Robert Bryce, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. His new book is called Power Hungry: The Myths of Green Energy and the Real Fuels for the Future.
And a kinder, gentler body scanner coming to an airport near you.
And English only, and English as the official language bills. They are gaining momentum here in the United States. We'll tell you where when America's Radio News comes back.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news,
so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
19 minutes after the top of the hour, get ready to get informed. You're in the right place. It's America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks to all of you for being with us on this Groundhog's Day. Well, federal aviation officials are giving airport scanners another try, but this time they're not looking as closely under travelers' clothes. The Transportation Security Administration began testing a new, more modest body scanning system at three airports. They hope will, you know, calm down critics' concerns that the nearly 500 full-body scanners at 78 airports reveal too much.
U.S. District Court Judge Roger Vincent rendered his surprisingly candid decision on Obamacare on Monday afternoon. He dismissed President Barack Obama's signature legislation as unconstitutional. In the lawsuit brought by 26 states, the Florida District Judge found that Congress exceeded the bounds of its authority by including the individual mandate and held the entire act unconstitutional because the individual mandate is unconstitutional and not severable from the rest of the law.
Well, to the relief of those winter-weary folks out there, the world's most famous groundhog predicting an early spring, Punxsutawney Phil has emerged from dawn this morning to make his 125th annual weather forecast in front of thousands who braved this muddy, icy conditions this morning there in Pennsylvania. And he said he did not see his shadow.
It was a smaller-than-normal crowd. Again, getting hammered the Midwest by a lot of inclement weather. In Dallas, for goodness sake, another snow day. A lot of slick roads out there this morning. I'm hearing the Super Bowl city. All right, let's head over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Robert Bryce. He is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. His new book is called Power Hungry: The Myths of Green Energy and the Real Fuels of the Future. Robert, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Hey, judging by the title of your book, you're not sitting here trashing all alternative fuels. You just think we should be concentrating on some of the correct ones, correct?
Well, absolutely. I'm in Austin, Texas this morning. We're having rolling blackouts here because of the freezing weather, which is not, thankfully, there's no snow here in Austin, but I've asked because I'm trying to find out how much wind energy is supplying to the grid this morning, and I bet it's pretty much zero, which is one of the issues that I raise in Power Hungry, is that the solar power, wind, or solar energy, wind energy, they have a great amount of appeal to the general public, but we can't count on them, and therefore we have to rely on traditional conventional forms of generation, and that's one of the key points in the book.
So what are some of the suggestions you have?
Well, I'm adamantly pro-natural gas and adamantly pro-nuclear. I'm not going to argue that coal and oil are going away. They clearly are not for decades to come. But the fuels of the future are clearly natural gas and nuclear. for a lot of reasons, including the fact that we're moving toward fuels that contain less carbon, where more people are moving to cities, and more people are using more and more electricity, and natural gas and nuclear can provide all of the benefits and are directly in line with those megatrends that I just talked about.
Now, what about the whole idea? Now, solar may not solve all the problems. Wind may not solve all of the problems by themselves. But what's the matter with having a smorgasbord, if you will, a large energy portfolio where we have wind, we have solar, we have biofuels, we have nuclear, we have all of the above approach? What's the matter with developing those alternative fuels, I don't know, to diversify and actually give Americans a little bit more of a choice in how they power their lives?
Well, fair enough. Diversity is a key issue, and it's one that is a positive in general. The problem, though, is when you provide subsidies that are out that are either destructive and or excessive. And you mentioned biofuels. Let's start with that, because just a week ago yesterday, the president mentioned biofuels in his State of the Union address and said we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels. This is madness. And the U.S. is now subsidizing the production of corn ethanol to the tune of $1.78 per gallon, according to the Congressional Budget Office. And what's the result? This year, 40% of U.S. corn, which is 15% of global corn, which is 5% of global grain, will be diverted into the corn ethanol scam in the United States. What's the result? We're seeing corn prices that are as high now as they were back in 2008. That's affecting wheat prices. And what is the result of that? We're seeing food price protests around the world, including where? Jordan. And part of the protest in Egypt is over rising food prices.
So where do you stand on the old issue, drill, baby, drill?
I'm for domestic oil and gas production, full stop. I think we should be drilling in Alaska. I think that we need to get busy. There is a tremendous resource in the United States, both of oil and gas, and we should be producing as much here as we can. That does not mean we're going to be energy independent. There's no such thing on the horizon. There has never been anything such thing in the U.S., But we need to be producing here because it makes economic sense.
With all due respect, sir, what about our sensitive ecosystems in the Alaskan Wildlife Refuge and the ecological disaster we just saw in the Gulf of Mexico that is still reeling with saturated marshes?
Well, we can talk about the Gulf of Mexico from everything that I've seen, all the reports that I've seen. The oil has largely been dispersed. You said
tell
it's an ecological disaster.
Twitter.
I don't think it has been. I think that the disaster part of that has been dramatically overplayed.
Well,
yes,
tell that
it,
to the folks down there that are saying their marshes are still destroyed and saturated with goop.
Yeah, well, I've been watching the headlines on this very closely. I'm not familiar with that. The fact is, yes, it got a lot of headlines for a while, and it was a terrible accident. BP should be held responsible, and they are.
Yeah, we're talking with Robert Bryce. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. His new book is called Power Hungry: The Myths of Green Energy and the Real Fuels for the Future. I think it bears pointing out, too, Mr. Bryce, that the Alaskan pipeline, now that it's in, we rarely hear of any problems with the Alaskan pipeline. I mean, if we're talking about ANWR and its sensitive environment out that way. And I've seen pictures of the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge, and it's a desolate, barren area, and there's a lot of energy out there. Why do you think there's such a staunch opposition from a lot of folks on the left that are opposed to us using our own natural resources?
Well, I think what's happened with the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is that it's become a symbol. It has become the symbol for the extreme left, the environmental left, to say, oh well, no, this must be protected no matter what, regardless of whether it's a very, very small fraction of the land area of ANWR. For them, it doesn't matter because they can use it as a symbolic issue to appeal to their constituents, which is fair. But the fact is that there is a tremendous resource there. And even if we take that aside, there's a tremendous natural gas resource in Alaska that could be developed. And so I just think that we have to be realistic as we go forward in terms of what fuels we're going to be using. And clearly, oil and natural gas are here to stay, and I think we should be using them.
Robert Bryce, senior fellow of the Manhattan Institute, his new book, check it out, Power Hungry: The Myths of Green Energy and the Real Fuels for the Future. Sir, thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
Thanks a million.
All right, coming up, Nani Darwish. She's the author of Cruel and Unusual Punishment. the terrifying global implications of Islamic law. We'll talk to him about the chaos going on over there in Egypt.
And pro-government forces there have gotten violent as the crisis deepens.
And English only, and English as the official language bills, they are gaining momentum in these 50 states. We'll tell you exactly where. When America's Radio News continues, this is where America's News breaks.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. When we turn on the light, the insects running high. This is America's Radio News.
This is where you come to get informed. It's America's Radio News. Happy you are there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
It can't last for very long. The country is going down the drain.
Egypt's opposition leader calls President Mubarak's offer to leave a lie.
You know, we're lucky to get a can of soda or a movie.
A field of dreams for one homeless family.
My hope is that the people will tell the Congress this is a bad product. Start over.
Senate Republicans say Obamacare has a weak pulse.
We're circling the globe and scouring the nation to bring you all the breaking news. And it is breaking fast and furiously over there in the Middle East. Lori London, a very busy news day here in the middle of the week.
It sure is, Chris Salcedo. Well, things took an ugly turn today on the streets of Cairo, clashes turning violent between opponents and supporters of President Mubarak. Soon after, several hundred or even 1,000 pro-Mubarak supporters threw Molotov cocktails and shooting automatic weapons into Liberation Square. Witnesses say pro-Mubarak forces started riding on camels and horseback, fighting with protesters while troops surrounded the square but made no attempt to intervene. Reports now, over 400 people have been wounded.
English only, and English only as the official language bills are gaining momentum. State legislators in Indiana and Minnesota are pushing laws requiring public documents and other government business in those states be done in only English. Minnesota state senators introduced their bill on Monday. The measure is similar to one introduced in the state house earlier in the month. Indiana State House representatives voted 63-26 last week to require all state business to be conducted in English. The next bill heads to the state Senate. And like Minnesota, Indiana's measure allows exceptions to the English-only rule in cases of public health or safety situations.
Well, some are calling it the mother of all storms, Chris. Mm. Forecasters say that ice accumulations have knocked down some tree limbs and power lines, ice affecting transit service, even as plow drivers have struggled to keep up with the snow on many roads, the storm bringing snow, thunder, wind, ice. It started in the Midwest, and it's barreled east as far as New England.
I'm thinking the Super Bowl committee didn't really actually anticipate wind and sleet and snow when they chose Dallas, of all places.
Of course not.
To host the Super Bowl, for goodness sake. That's just
Thunder snow, they're calling it.
Absolutely astounding. Let's head to the America's Radio Newsline. Nani Darwish standing by, author of Cruel and Unusual Punishment, The Terrifying Global Implications of Islamic Law. Nani, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hey, wanted to play you something. This is the opposition leader, Mohamed Al-Baradei. I want to play this clip for you and get you to react to the man who is now the face of the opposition there in Egypt. Have a listen.
I've lived in the U.S. for 15 years. I've lived in Europe for 25 years. I've lived in democracies. This is, to me, is without democracy, there's no life. So the issue of who is going to run doesn't really matter. The important thing is how he's going to be chosen.
Look at your country right now. There's no internet service. Commerce has ground to a halt. Stores are closed. Nothing's happening. The price of oil is spiking. Tourism, people are trying to get out, not
sure.
come in.
Sure.
How long can this go on?
It can't last for very long. The country is going down the drain. And I think unless Mubarak understands that he needs to go by the end of the week, my fear that this whole situation will go bloody. And again, I continue to appeal to him too, and people around him, that he needs to go. He is the major part of the solution. Once he is out, everything else will go back to normal.
Nani Darwish, the American press and indeed the international press also regarding this guy as a major player in this transition, the future of Egypt. What is your take on Mohamed El-Baradei?
Well, he is a new figure in the Egyptian politics, but internationally he's quite known. I'm afraid that he is defending the Muslim Brotherhood. That's my fear about his who he is. What he's saying right now is correct. I mean, the Mubarak's future as a leader is really gone. He mm-hmm. Mubarak could have gone down in history as a hero if he had conducted fair elections.
Right.
And he could have done so. And I wished he did, because Mubarak, as much as he is a dictator, of course, but he has tried to, he has done a lot of good and a lot of bad, but as a whole, he should have expected this. He should have anticipated that there's going to be something like that, because it was just a matter of time. I knew there was going to be an explosion in Egypt, and it happened.
And things seem to, obviously, things are at a standstill with their economy. He said he won't run for re-election. These protesters want him out now, but now it appears that men on camels and horses have clearly been ordered there by the government. So it's not really an orderly transition. It looks like he's still fighting back, and it's getting uglier. I mean, how long can this go on before something gives?
Yeah, he had his chance to conduct many chances to conduct fair elections, and he failed, and he waited for something like that mm-hmm. to tell the people that he's going to leave and conduct the fair elections. His time really is up.
Yeah, you said it, Donnie, Anani, that it looks like Mubarak is basically out of the picture. So now a lot of the folks around the world, a lot of the folks in the American press, they are looking ahead. They are looking to the future. What will Egypt look like? Will it look like Tehran and the nation of Iran today, or will it look like something of a burgeoning democracy? And I want to refocus you back on Mohamed El-Baradei. Is he the man to pull this off? What is your evaluation of Mohamed El-Baradei? Is he actually a pro-Western man? Is he a friend of the United States?
I doubt that he's really a true friend. Because he's defending the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
The Muslim Brotherhood, their emblem, if you look at it, is two swords and one word in Arabic that Westerners cannot understand it. But it says wa'aidu. It means and prepare for them. This is the beginning of a very violent verse from the Quran. It says prepare for them harsh force and terrorize them.
Wow. All right.
If this is a peaceful group or a pro-democracy group, why don't they announce they will change their emblem?
Yeah.
They will change their...
Yeah, they definitely need some new PR.
That's for sure.
Well, we certainly thank you so much.
Nani Darwish, the author of Cruel and Unusual Punishment, Terrifying Global Implications of Islamic Law. Thank you very much for being on America's Radio News.
Thank you.
Coming up here on the show, the United States held a secret meeting with the Muslim Brotherhood. We'll give you details.
And Yemen's president says he won't seek another term.
And Planned Parenthood in hot water again. There is video and audio to this you're going to want to hear. As America's radio news continues, this is where the nation's news breaks.
Breaking news. And the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's radio news.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter.
We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. Happy to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Well, Yemen's President Saleh, a key U.S. ally against al-Qaeda, said today he will not seek to extend his presidency in a move that would end his three-decade rule when his current term ends in 2013. Eyeing protests that swept Tunisia's leader from power and threatened to topple Egypt's president or have pretty much. He's also vowing not to pass on the reins of government to his son. He also appealed to the opposition to call off protests as a rally there looms.
In the meantime, a report says the Egyptian government has information. A diplomat with the U.S. Embassy in Cairo secretly met yesterday with a senior leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, the nation's major Islamist opposition group. WorldNet Daily is reporting the topic of the meeting was the future of Egypt following the fall of President Hosni Mubarak, and an Egyptian intelligence official told WND. The claim comes amid charges from Cairo that the Obama administration has been encouraging the protests, rocking Egypt, and targeting the rule of Mubarak, a key U.S. ally in the Middle East.
A sting operation by Google reveals Microsoft has been copying results from Google, its Bing search engine. The search giant alleges Microsoft has been using its Internet Explorer web browser and the Bing search bar to harvest information on Google users. That, according to a lengthy report, that report also oversees the search engine ranking algorithm, which was crystal clear about the findings.
It's a piece of Americana, Lori. It's something that will be ever iconic here in this country. The red swimsuit that helped make Charlie's Angels actress Farrah Fawcett an icon. It's going to the Smithsonian in Washington. Farrah's longtime companion Ryan O'Neill donating that swimsuit and other items to the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. That 1976 poster of the TV star in a dampened red swimsuit sold millions.
Calm down, Chris.
Millions, millions of copies. I had a couple of myself.
All right. Well, here's another reason to get some good sleep in the week leading up to a major test or presentation. Sleep selectively enhances memories you expect to need in the future. That, according to a new study, researchers in Germany tested a group of healthy adults and found participants who knew what they would be tested on things later remembered them better than those who didn't after a good night's sleep of about 7 or 8 hours. Participants who were not permitted to sleep didn't show memory improvement, regardless of whether or not they thought there would be a test.
Interesting.
Night.
Heavy snowfall, completely consistent with what they have been predicting as a consequence of man-made global warming. That, according to the former Vice President Al Gore. Quote, rising global temperatures can create all sorts of havoc, ranging from hotter dry spells to colder winters, along with the increasingly violent storms, flooding, forest fires, and loss of endangered species. So the Vice President is saying is that no matter what happens, it's global warming.
Hey, Chris.
There you go.
I know you're worried about this.
Yes, ma'am.
If you're worried about getting your fix of Booze, Love, and Uncle Charlie on Two and a Half Men, you might not have to wait that much longer.
Yeah.
TMZ reporting Charlie Sheen will return to the set in 3 to 4 weeks. Producers plan to make up the episodes not being filmed while he's completing his stay-at-home rehab. Sources connected to the show say, while nothing is set in stone, the addiction specialist has said Charlie could be back to work next month.
Good. You know what? I hope he kicks his demons.
Of course.
I hope he gets back to it.
Such a funny show.
It is a great show. You may have caught this. The Miami Herald reporting this morning, an anti-abortion group Tuesday released an undercover video taken in its latest attempt to discredit an organization that provides abortions. Footage of operatives posing as a pimp and a prostitute seeking health services at a New Jersey clinic. Planned Parenthood said it promptly notified law enforcement authorities after the visit, but it also announced late Tuesday that it had fired the clinic employee for violating some of the organization's policies. Have a listen to a montage of this 11-minute video, and you be the judge.
Some of them are young. They're kind of like, some are like 15, 14, mm-hmm. and some of them don't speak any English,
okay.
You know, because they're not even from here, so it's like, how can they come in here? Because they don't always feel comfortable coming mm-hmm. into facilities.
One, minors are always accepted without parental consent.
Okay.
Only thing that you do have to be careful is if they are a minor, they just have to be aware that they have to be careful with what you're, you know, I'm not kind of like leading in. I don't
so
want to get anybody
how would
in trouble.
You, I know, it's fine. How would
just,
you recommend, like,
if their partner's the same age, younger, whatever, 14 and under, we have to report.
14 under. That includes being 14. Right?
Yeah, 14, you know, once they get to 15, then there's a little bit more playroom. So as long as they just lie and say, oh, he's 15, 16, you know, as long as they don't say 14.
That is the manager. and a nurse counseling these undercover folks that are posing as an underage prostitute and a pimp, counseling them to lie about their status so they can get treatment. And you know what? And the only reason this is a controversy is Planned Parenthood gets $350 million in taxpayer dollars a year. And I think that's why Planned Parenthood came out so strongly.
Right. They did the right thing. They fired her. They alerted the authorities. So, you know,
Completely against their policy, according to Planned Parenthood. And that's why this person is gone.
Well, Congressman Jim Moran of Virginia, Democrat, told MSNBC's Chris Matthews he considers the Florida judge, Judge Vinson's ruling against Obamacare to be a partisan decision.
This is a conservative, even partisan interpretation of an issue. And the proponents of repeal knew once they got Judge Hudson and once they got Judge Vinson what the outcome of their ruling was going to be. The problem, though, is the Supreme Court, because that's where it will be decided. And we've known since they appointed George Bush over Al Gore, despite the trend of the Florida vote counting, that at least four members of this Supreme Court are activist, conservative, even partisan. Here you have Clarence Thomas's wife, one of the founders and leaders of the Tea Party movement, Judge Scalia's in a conference with Michelle Obama talking about the Tea Party movement. You've got Judge Alito publicly disputing the president of the State of the Union. Even Judge Roberts has shown himself to be a conservative activist in many of his decisions. It's going to be decided in a court that is divided, and the only vote that really matters is Judge Kennedy's now.
Well, Chris, he does have a point. We've gotten four rulings. Two have been upholding it, both by Democrats.
Right.
Two have struck it down, and those were Republicans.
I'm just amazing how he had the ability to go all the way back to the 2000 presidential election to kind of rope that in. That was kind of odd. I mean, he was all over the place there for a second, but he was able to get in a dig at George W. Bush as we're talking about health care. Just amazing how some of them have the ability to do that. While we're on the topic of Mr. Matthews, we knew it would happen sooner or later. Last night, MSNBC's Chris Matthews, he compared the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to the American Tea Party. Here's a bit of his exchange with the Republican strategist, John Ferry.
So the Muslim Brotherhood has a parallel role here with the Tea Party. They're the ones that keep you honest to decide whether you've stayed too long, whether you've got a sell-by date looming.
You know, Chris, you were in Congress for a long time. I served in Congress for a while. I've seen as many times where members of Congress lose touch with their constituents.
So the Tea Party is the constituency. That's the new constituency.
No. I think you've got to make sure you have a majority coalition.
He's kidding, right?
Okay, I think he's going too far here.
It's turning into a bad joke. I mean, really. I mean, there must be some kind of meeting.
Maybe he's trying to take over for Oberman.
Well, you know what? That's a very good point. Do you think that actually that there's a conscious effort now that Oberman, he was the most bombastic?
He's just saying things that are just extreme.
Yeah, well, Oberman was the most bombastic left-winger there on MSNBC. Do you think that there's actually, because I was in television. I know these editorial meetings take place before every show, you know, which way are we going to go? And do you think they actually have a conversation? What can Chris Matthews say that will just anger everybody
ridiculous? Well, I don't know that, but certainly Oberman was, besides the fact that he was apparently very difficult to work with, he certainly was a ratings getter.
Absolutely.
You know?
But look at us. Here we are playing Chris Matthews. He's saying one of the most outlandish things, and he's getting pressed. Do you think that's part of a strategy maybe to get his visibility up? He just says outlandish, crazy things just so he can get covered? I'm just saying, because no rational human being would be able to make that connection between the American Tea Party.
Well, no, wait a minute. Are you calling him rational?
No. Never accused Chris Matthews of being rational.
Well,
you know what day it is?
What day is it, Chris?
Today is Groundhog Day.
That's right. The world's most famous groundhog. Punxsutawney Phil didn't see a shadow. Decreed an early spring, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. Bill Murray gave us a far different forecast in his movie about the Keystone State's favorite tradition.
Yeah, and we're going to play that for you coming up next hour. That's for sure. We're celebrating Groundhog Day here on America's Radio News. Coming up, pro and anti-government supporters clash in Cairo.
That's right, and we will follow more of that coming up in a horrific animal cruelty story in Canada.
And Rick Santorum, former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, he will be on this show. Make sure you're there for it. America's Radio News. It's where America's news breaks.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now on America's Radio News. So glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
Voices of the Egyptian people tell us that this is one of those moments.
President Obama puts on the pressure in Egypt.
Two-thirds of the physicians in this country think that this is going to be disastrous for care in the country.
The GOP takes steps to reverse the president's prescription for health care.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
Despite a deep freeze, the nation's most famous prognosticator says spring is on the way.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation for all the latest news.
Yeah, spring's on the way. Let's hope it gets here, I don't know, like tomorrow, because my goodness, it is just absolutely freezing across a majority of the United States.
A major deep freeze, but things are heating up continuously in the Middle East as international pressure grows for Egypt's president to quit and the U.S. pushes for a fast transition. Things took a very ugly turn on the streets of Cairo today. Clashes turning violent between opponents and now supporters of President Mubarak. Soon after, the pro-Mubarak supporters started throwing Molotov cocktails and shooting automatic weapons into Liberation Square. Witnesses say pro-Mubarak forces were riding on camels and horseback fighting with protesters, while troops, military troops surrounding the square, made no attempt to intervene, and now we are hearing reports at least 400 people have been wounded.
Al-Qaeda is on the verge of producing radioactive weapons after sourcing nuclear material and recruiting rogue scientists to build dirty bombs, according to leaked diplomatic documents. Leading atomic regulator has privately warned the world stands on the brink of a nuclear 9/11. Security briefings suggest that jihadi groups are also close to producing workable and efficient biological and chemical weapons that could kill thousands if unleashed in attacks on the West. This is all according to thousands of classified American cables obtained by WikiLeaks.
Buoyed by a federal court ruling, Senate Republicans have maneuvered for a vote to repeal the year-old health care law while the party's potential White House contenders take turns urging them on. Despite the stepped-up attack, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says the legislation is secure.
And Congressman Anthony Weiner, a Democrat from New York, he is slamming former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty. Some folks are speculating he's going to run for president. He's slamming him for supporting Florida's ruling that Obamacare is unconstitutional.
Congressman Weiner, I want you to listen to what Tim Pawlenty said about this. He said, "I was proud to join this federal lawsuit challenging Obamacare's individual mandate."
This mug knows more about health care reform than Pawlenty knows, so I'm not sure we should take it too seriously.
Well, that's a last word mug, that's one of the wiser mugs.
Pawlenty's on the side of the freeloaders. This bill was written to protect the 80-90% of people who are playing by the rules. And by the way, all of us who pay taxes, we get stuck with those bills too.
And I think that it kind of ignores the whole precedent of being able to tell Americans what they should be doing, how they should engage in commerce. I think that Mr. Weiner was actually ignoring that portion.
Well, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is sounding off on Obamacare. She says her state wants to repeal just as Florida has ruled it unconstitutional.
First of all, this is not just a simple talking point of states' rights. I think people need to understand that constitutionally, the federal government can't dictate to the states what to do any more than the states can dictate to individuals what they can do. That's what makes this country great. What we're going to do is we're going to acknowledge the fact that they did make a great ruling and say that it was unconstitutional. I am going to contact all the other governors in the country and submit a letter to the president asking him to expedite the Supreme Court ruling. You know, this is something that you've got every state in chaos. We've got to make sure that we are taking care of this quickly so that we can move forward with our states. It will cost right. South Carolina $5 billion over the next 10 years. We're in an $800 million budget hole just this year alone. We can't sustain that. We can't afford it.
And if you look at back and forth, how long have we actually been on health care? I mean, dating all the
way. It seems like forever.
It does seem like forever, and that's going to go on even more as we try to rectify this whole situation. And we're going to talk to health care coming up here in the next segment on America's Radio News with Rick Santorum. He is the former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania and a senior fellow of ethics and public at the Public Policy Center.
And state TV in Egypt now telling protesters to evacuate as pro-government forces throw Molotov cocktails at demonstrators.
And Egypt's antiquities, they are at risk with all the violence out there in the Middle East. We'll tell you about that right here where America's news breaks, America's Radio News.
broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
Fast, reliable, and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
And this is where the nation's news breaks. Glad to have you along. You can either read about it tomorrow or you can hear about it right now, right here. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Yes, we are sweeping the globe and scouring the nation for all the latest news. Well, federal aviation officials are giving airport scanners another try. This time, they're not looking as closely under your clothes. The Transportation Security Administration began testing a new, more modest body scanning system at three airports. They hope will, calm critics' concerns that the nearly 500 full-body scanners at 78 airports are just revealing too much.
With all the violence over there in the Middle East and Egypt, there's a casualty some are not thinking all too much about. It's the risk of Egypt's antiquities. A small group of looters damaged priceless artifacts inside the Egyptian Museum in Cairo before being captured. Soldiers took position afterwards in the museum to protect those precious contents. Zawi Hawass, Egypt's state minister of antiquities and National Geographic Explorer in Residence, confirms the damage, but he says nothing was stolen at the Cairo Museum. Among the damaged artifacts, though, items from King Tut's tomb. Despite the clearly visible damages, Egyptologists are hopeful some of the items can be restored.
This is a disturbing story, Chris. 100 dogs shot dead over 2 days after an expected post-Olympics boon in dog sledding business at an adventure company in Canada. The gruesome event described in documents awarding compensation to a worker who claimed post-traumatic stress disorder for having to shoot the dogs after bookings dropped sharply for a tour operator following the 2010 Winter Olympics. Now, following the revelations of the slaughter, the Vancouver Humane Society is calling for a ban on the dog sled tour business.
All right, let's head over to the America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Eli Lake, national security correspondent for the Washington Times. Eli, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thanks so much for having me.
Been hearing the political punditry going back and forth now. I think the conventional wisdom is saying Mubarak, whether it's in September or whether it's sooner, he's pretty much done. So now we're focusing on what Egypt will look like, and everybody seems to be focused on Mohamed al-Baradei. What kind of man can we expect if al-Baradei takes any type of position of authority in Egypt? Is he a friend of the U.S. or is he not?
He clashed with the United States when he was the director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is traditionally a technical organization for the United Nations aimed at assessing and kind of basically enforcing one of the most important treaties in the world right now, which is the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Past directors of the IAEA did not see that it was their job, one way or the other, to intervene in the delicate international politics as to whether violators of the Non-Proliferation Treaty would be censured by the United Nations Security Council. Not true for Mohamed al-Baradei. He positioned himself in such a way that critics, including John Bolton and other diplomats who worked in Iran file in the last 7 years, said that he would withhold information from reports that was damaging. His defenders say that, you know, he used his discretion and it was perfectly proper for him to do that. But the bottom line is that the Bush administration wanted to sanction Iran in between 2004 and 2009, and Baradei really did his best to try to avoid that because he believed he was stopping another Iraq war, and he said as much in interviews towards the end of his tenure.
Well, we say Mubarak is out, but clearly today we're seeing he's still there and he's still wreaking havoc, and we don't know when he's going to leave, but it doesn't seem like anything can really move forward until he does at this point. Now, I heard this morning CNN's Anderson Cooper talking about how he was punched and his camera woman was attacked by folks carrying police-issued nightsticks and tear gas that obviously appear to be brutal pro-Mubarak police just out of uniform. So where are we going here?
Well, it appears that there was an order that was given to the national police to, first of all, we don't know what were breakouts and what were organized letting certain criminal elements out of the jails. This is something Saddam Hussein did before the Iraq War. That is going to create a serious crisis in terms of everyday security when you let a lot of prisoners out of jail. That happened last week, we know of, and we know that even certain people in the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, one of the most dangerous terrorist groups on the planet and a precursor to Al-Qaeda, were also let out. Mubarak appears to some sort of be playing a double game. He gives speeches to the nation in which he says he's willing to, he won't run in 2011, he's heard the message, he's firing his government, he doesn't want the army to fire on the demonstrators, but then we see the evidence, right, and reports from the ground that the national police, in fact, are doing that, and there may be agents provocateurs in those crowds as well.
What do you think the role the Muslim Brotherhood is going to play in Egypt's future?
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, at least the mainstream version of it, I lived in Cairo between 2005 and 2006, the Muslim Brotherhood rejected violence since the mid-1960s, when Gamal Abdel Nasser, the first president of Egypt, assassinated someone named Saeed Qutb, who was a radical leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in 1966. Most of the Muslim Brotherhood became or tried to become more of a civil society organization. The more radical followers of Saeed Qutb became Egyptian Islamic Jihad. They ended up murdering Anwar Sadat and becoming basically the leadership or a lot of the leadership of Al-Qaeda, what we know to be Al-Qaeda today.
Right. Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two in Al-Qaeda, actually was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hey, Eli, we got to get going. Eli Lake, national security correspondent for the Washington Times, talking a bit with him about the chaos in Egypt. Thanks a lot for coming on America's Radio News. All right, appreciate that, buddy. Let's shift gears, bring it back here at home. Right now, there are efforts underway in the United States Senate to actually take a vote on the repeal of Obamacare. And you know what? The minority leader actually said he was going to do this, and now it is actually taking place. We're waiting to see those results in the meantime. Senators Barrasso and Graham, they rolled out a plan yesterday to basically roll back Obamacare and give the states the power here. Those senators, Barrasso and Graham, introduced their legislation allowing states to opt out of Obamacare if they so choose.
The bottom line is what we're trying to accomplish here for the American people is we want people to get the care they need from the doctors they want at a price they can afford. And we know that Obamacare doesn't do that.
If states could speak, I am confident that a majority of Americans through their state legislature, if they had the chance, would opt out of these provisions. And we'll never know till we have that vote. And to my colleagues in the Senate, give the people you represent a chance to speak. You may be surprised as to what they have to say. The way this bill became law was the worst of Washington, and I'm going to do everything I can to bring it down and start over using a process that we all could be proud of, leading to a result that does what this senator wants. This is a smart man who understands health care far better than I. He and the rest of us basically were shut out. We took a vote on Christmas Eve to pass this thing, a couple of years ago, and the rest is history. So now I want to get this debate out of Washington, onto the streets of the states of this country, listen to the people, and start over. You got it right. My hope is that the people will tell the Congress this is a bad product, start over.
Yeah, Lindsey Graham, of course, referring to the backroom deals, the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana purchase, all that kind of stuff, all the backroom deals that were done to get Obamacare passed, and which a lot of Republicans screamed loudly at that point that was unfair.
Okay, well, South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint was speaking with Greta Van Susteren on Fox News last night to discuss the repeal of Obamacare and the role he expects Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to play. Here's what they had to say.
It'll probably come up as an amendment vote. Hopefully we'll have a couple of days to debate it, but Harry Reid could try to table it.
What would be the strategy for him to want to table it because you don't have the votes to pass it anyway?
Right. Well, he may just want to get it out of the way. He can table it and the vote would come up right away. Otherwise, we can debate the health care bill throughout this week and part of next week. It just depends on how much the Democrats want to hear Republicans talk about how bad Obamacare is. I mean, we can talk about the 500 waivers he gave last week, a lot to his union friends. And Greta, that's what really makes me mad. A lot of the unions around the country spent a lot of money pushing this health care bill down Americans' throats. Now they all want waivers from the program because it's so expensive to implement.
And this debate is not going anywhere, Chris. It looks like, you know, this is clearly along political lines.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of politics playing out here. For example, there are 23 senators from the Democrat Party upcoming for re-election in 2012, and the Republicans are trying to force them to take a stand on this health care law. Coming up, Caroline Glick, the deputy managing editor for the Jerusalem Post, will ask her about the chaos in the Middle East.
And State TV, they're telling protesters to evacuate the streets of Cairo. Pro-government forces now throwing Molotov cocktails at demonstrators.
And President Obama snubs an oversight congressman on the first major document deadline. We'll give you the details as America's Radio News rolls on. Coming up next.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. I am glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London on this Tuesday, February 2nd. Here's what's happening.
Voices of the Egyptian people tell us that this is one of those moments.
President Obama puts on the pressure in Egypt.
Two-thirds of the physicians in this country think that this is going to be disastrous for care in the country.
The GOP takes steps to reverse the president's prescription for health care.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
Despite a deep freeze, the nation's most famous prognosticator says spring is on the way.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation for all the latest news.
Oh, Lori London, an early spring does sound good, does it not?
It absolutely does, because I think lots of folks are just plain sick of all this yucky weather. Well,
sure.
We've got things heating up in the Middle East as international pressure grows for Egypt's president to quit. Hundreds of pro-government supporters attacked protesters today at Cairo's Central Square. It looks like things are really turning ugly, clashes turning violent between opponents and supporters of President Hosni Mubarak. Apparently, supporters of his throwing Molotov cocktails, shooting automatic weapons. Witnesses say pro-Mubarak forces riding on camels and horseback fought with protesters while troops surrounding the square made no attempt to intervene. Now, we are getting reports of over 700 people wounded.
Back here at home, the Obama administration has snubbed top GOP oversight official Representative Daryl Issa on his first major document deadline as new chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. But Issa is hitting back yesterday. He demanded key documents be sent in 2 days. The Obama snub is the first sign of how the administration will respond to demands for documents and testimony by key officials from Republicans in control of the House now that the GOP holds the power of congressional subpoena.
Well, a massive winter storm billed as the worst in decades barreled into the Northeast today, paralyzing big cities and small towns with deep snow, thick ice, and stranding hundreds of motorists, closing airports and schools all across the Midwest as well. 20-plus inches of snow fell by midday in Chicago, making the storm the city's third largest on record, and still more coming down.
Let's head to the America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Caroline Glick, the deputy managing editor of the Jerusalem Post, a senior Middle East fellow at the Center of Security Policy, and has served as an assistant foreign policy advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Caroline, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's great to be on your show this morning.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about Israel's perspective here. This whole thing going on in Egypt. Egypt was such a friend and such an important ally to Israel. With all of this chaos, they are really sweating bullets over there, aren't they?
Well, yeah, you know, Egypt has actually never been Israel's friend. I mean, we've had a very cold peace with Egypt for the past 30 years, but we have had a cold peace as opposed to a hot war, and that has been a strategic asset that Israel has based its entire defense strategy on, that Egypt, which until 1979 was Israel's most formidable enemy, was effectively neutralized by the peace treaty. Now, although the relations with the Mubarak government, the regime, have not been good in the sense that he has really been a leading force in the political war against Israel and international diplomacy, he's much better than all the alternatives, which is why here in Israel, we are very concerned about what's coming, and we're utterly shocked and disgusted with the way that the Obama administration has been handling, or shall I say mishandling, this entire thing by essentially giving Egypt a cold shoulder from the very beginning and siding with the Muslim Brotherhood,
right,
which is really the focal point. The main force behind the opposition that we've seen in the streets of Egypt for the past week.
Yeah,
so
Caroline,
it's really been a shocking thing to see.
Yeah, I got to qualify my statement. I guess we could say that Egypt is the closest thing to a friend that Israel has in that region. I guess we should qualify it by saying that.
Yeah.
And really, the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't seem to be the majority here. This seems to be only a 30% of these people that are they're young people that want freedom and democracy. From all indications, that's what they want. They want food. They want jobs. They want opportunity.
Right. So, okay, maybe. But they don't have any power, and they won't have any power. The Democrats, the pretty people who are out on the street and talking to cameramen from Western news agencies are perhaps really serious about their urge for liberal democracy in Egypt. But they have no power. And the people who have the power in Egypt are the organized people, and the organized people and the people who are absolutely determined to take over Egypt are from the Muslim Brotherhood. And when you're looking at a fractured country that has no clear leader to replace Mubarak, when you have that kind of a situation, then obviously if you have a group that, as an outlawed organization, already has 30% of the support of the people, and just imagine what will happen when it becomes legal,
yeah.
Then clearly that is the strongest force outside of the regime, which is now being overthrown, and they will therefore either be in power formally or be the power behind anybody who's sitting on the throne after Mubarak.
We're talking with Caroline Glick. She's the deputy managing editor of the Jerusalem Post. And Caroline, I got to ask you about Mohammed al-Baradei. He has connections with Iran. He has been accused from some quarters here in the United States and around the world of being pro-Iran and not exactly a friend of the United States. And he has also teamed up and reached out, reports say, to the Muslim Brotherhood, trying to form some type of coalition government in the wake of the Mubarak regime. What is the West to make of Mohammed al-Baradei?
That he's a puppet of the worst enemies of the West. He always he has been, you know, six years as the head of the International Atomic Agency, Atomic Energy Agency of the UN. He was looking, couldn't find anything wrong going on in Iran as more and more centrifuges started turning out enriched uranium by the day. And yet Baradei was the man who was shielding Iran from any UN Security Council action, any concerted action by the United States and its allies, systematically lying in his reports about what was going on in Iran, winning him the undying love of the Ayatollahs. And you know, and also he has been, particularly since he left the IAEA in 2009, he's been the best friend of the Muslim Brotherhood. And again, you know, what's funny about Baradei is that he speaks really nice English and he appears really well on Western television screens, and he looks like he's very serious. This is a man who has almost no roots in Egypt either. I mean, he's been living in Vienna and New York and being an international diplomat of the transnational jet setters, and then he suddenly plops down in Cairo and says, "Makes me president." So he has no support in Egypt, but he's a useful idiot for the Muslim Brotherhood, which is very happy to hide behind him and say, "Oh yes, look at how nice we are, look at how Western we are. We can make it very easy for the United States to support moves in Egypt that are going to bring the progenitors of Al-Qaeda and Hamas to power in the United States' as until recently a most important Arab ally."
Caroline, what is the man on the street saying, just the average Israeli? Are they worried about this? They obviously are living in a democratic society. I'm sure they want that for the Egyptian people, but obviously have big fears. What are they saying? What are folks just on the street saying?
Well, we think that this is a terrible, terrible development. You know, we'd be happy if there was a liberal democracy in Egypt, but there's no chance of that happening anytime soon. And these protesters aren't going to bring it. And if there are open elections in Egypt, just as happened in the Palestinian Authority, where Hamas won, the Muslim Brotherhood will become the main political force in Egypt.
Oh, that's going to be a nightmare.
And we I would say that the most, I think that there are two emotions going on. First, there's anxiety about what we're going to see in Egypt, and we already see how it's impacting on Jordan, the Jordanian king, who also is the other country in the Arab world that has a peace treaty with Israel. He just had to fire his entire government yesterday in trying to placate his opposition. And we don't know how it's going to impact all the rest of the countries around us, but it's not going to be good. And this is after Hezbollah took over Lebanon just 2 weeks ago, and the United States didn't have any problem with that whatsoever, apparently.
Yep. So that's... All right, Caroline Glick, Deputy Managing Editor of the Jerusalem Post, a Senior Middle East Fellow at the Center for Security Policy. Thanks a lot, Caroline, for being on the America's Radio News Show. We appreciate having you on. Coming up as we get into the next segment here, Larry Hagman is returning to some old digs in Dallas. We'll tell you about that.
And Ricky Gervais, will he be back to host another award show?
And a woman tries to mail a puppy?
Oh, God.
Can you believe this?
No.
We're gonna give you the details of this as America's Radio News rolls on.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
You can read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now. This is America's Radio News. We're glad you are with us. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Happy to have you along. Well, a sting operation by Google revealing Microsoft has been copying results from Google for its Bing search engine. The search giant alleges Microsoft has been using its Internet Explorer web browser and the Bing search bar to harvest information on Google users.
Actor Larry Hagman, he's set to appear in a TV remake of the classic 1980s soap opera Dallas. The 79-year-old will reprise his role as the oil baron J.R. Ewing in the new pilot. It's going to be made by TNT. Original stars Patrick Duffy and Linda Gray, they have signed on. They're going to play their roles, Bobby Ewing and Sue Ellen Ewing, respectively. The new show will focus on the Ewing offspring, John Ross and Christopher Ewing, as they clash over the future of that family dynasty.
Uh-oh. Well, I was hoping for some more I Dream of Jeannie myself.
That would be good. I mean, so was I.
I know, you were dreaming of it.
Yes.
Ricky Gervais says despite the acrimony over his job hosting the Golden Globes, he was asked to consider returning next year. In a diary of his experience hosting the Globes for Heat magazine, he says organizers asked him to consider a third year, but he says he's inclined to turn it down.
Guess what's coming to the Smithsonian? The
what?
Red swimsuit that helped make Charlie's Angels actress Farrah Fawcett an icon here in the United States is going to the Smithsonian in Washington. Farrah's longtime companion, Ryan O'Neill, donating that swimsuit and other items to the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Of course, we all remember that 1976 poster of the TV star in the dampened red swimsuit. It sold millions of copies.
Of course it did.
Of course it did.
Hot stuff. Well, get this. Actually, this is kind of a feel-good story. A homeless couple heading to the Super Bowl on Sunday, despite having only 90 cents in their pockets. Wita Wright and her boyfriend Aaron were walking around Green Bay's Winterfest celebration, repeatedly asked by strangers, "Have you been to Dallas lately?" And it turns out the Dallas Convention and Visitors Bureau was putting on a contest for a mystery man. They were walking around the city, and the first person to approach him with that question would win a trip to the Super Bowl.
We came down here hoping that we might be able to do something free at the Winterfest, have some fun, and then we won Super Bowl tickets. And it doesn't get any more amazing than that. We had 90 cents in our pocket. And we have won a package that people have offered thousands of dollars for. And all I could think of is, oh my gosh, these corporations that put this on, you know, they must be thinking, yes, finally, a contest that we put it on and the parameters were so that somebody that could never in a million years afford to go can go. And what better than a couple in a homeless shelter? Not that we're more deserving, But a homeless shelter, you know, we're lucky to get a can of soda or a movie, and we're going to the Super Bowl, and I've never been to a football game.
It warms the cockles of the heart, doesn't it?
It does.
Never been to a football game.
That doesn't mean she doesn't like football. Maybe she can never afford it, Chris.
I'm just saying, if your first football game that you see in person happens to be a Super Bowl,
that's pretty amazing.
You're doing something right.
Absolutely.
That is very good.
Nice to hear something good for a change.
Well, you know, the big talk around here in the United States has been this whole talk about the repeal of Obamacare. Of course, we're all paying attention to what's happening over in the turmoil in Egypt. Back here at home, long before his administration went into federal court to fight the 26 states that are now challenging the constitutionality of the federal government, forcing people to buy health insurance, then presidential candidate Barack Obama told Ellen DeGeneres that unlike his opponent, Hillary Clinton, he opposed forcing the uninsured to buy health insurance, saying it would be like forcing the homeless to buy homes. Here's a flashback to the interview that will haunt President Obama forever.
Let's talk about the flyers in Ohio that Hillary says that they didn't represent her properly. They misrepresent her. Did they? And what do you say about that?
Obviously, I think that they represented her position properly, which is that she supported in the past NAFTA, which has been pretty hard on Ohio. And we've had an ongoing discussion about health care. Both of us want to provide health care to all Americans. There's a slight difference, and her plan is a good one, but she mandates that everybody buy health care. She'd have the government force every individual to buy insurance, and I don't have such a mandate because I don't think the problem is that people don't want health insurance, it's that they can't afford it. So I focus more on lowering costs, and this is a modest difference. But it's one that she's tried to elevate, arguing that because I don't force people to buy health care, that I'm not insuring everybody. Well, if things were that easy, I could mandate everybody buy a house, and that would solve the problem of homelessness. It doesn't.
That was the president's main criticism of Hillary's health care plan. The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, her health care plan, when they were running against each other for the nomination, for the Democratic nomination for president, is that it actually forced people to buy insurance, and it turns out Obamacare does exactly the same
thing.
His
words coming back to haunt him a bit. Well, sick of winter, a lot of people are with all these storms. A famous prognosticator today, the world's most famous groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, didn't see a shadow and decreed an early spring. Yay, Bill Murray gave us a far different forecast in his classic 1993 movie about the Keystone State's favorite tradition.
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Groundhog, they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you. You know, you want a prediction about the weather, you're asking the wrong Phil. I'll give you a winter prediction. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, and it's going to last you for the rest of your life.
One of the classics.
Absolutely.
Bill Murray. And
they're showing it over and over again on some channels, I hear.
Absolutely. Hey, I wanted to get this story in just for you.
Okay.
They're calling it Parcel Puppy. A Minneapolis woman is charged with animal cruelty after police say she tried to send a puppy through the mail.
Good God.
The poodle mixed pup is being held temporarily at the animal control office in Minneapolis, but still belongs to the woman who allegedly tried to mail it, 39-year-old Stacy Champion. A puppy is a definite no-no, said Pete Nowacki. He is the U.S. Postal Service operative there in Minneapolis. Postal workers didn't know right away about the puppy inside the box until it fell off the counter. But good news, the puppy's going to be fine.
That's good. What's wrong with people, Chris?
Champion has until Friday to make an appeal to animal control to get her puppy back. You know what it reminds me of?
Oh, she should definitely get the puppy back. Definitely.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of folks that call 911 when they're ordering McDonald's.
Right.
My order didn't work out right.
Makes about as much sense.
Okay, we're wrapping it up for today here on America's Radio News. Tomorrow we will, of course, follow the latest of what's happening out there in Egypt.
Of course, we are following that story. The crisis deepening, over 700 people now wounded.
And what is to become of Obamacare? We are told the Senate will vote on this initiative sometime today or at least this week. When they do, we'll update you here. For Lori London, I'm Chris Salcedo. This is America's Radio News. We'll see you tomorrow.